You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Welcome back to the Wolverine.com podcast. I'm John Borton here with Tom Crawford. Our man in East Lansing brings you all things Michigan from that particular, at times, hostile outpost. Tom, great to have you back with us.
It can be hostile. Even in, you know, the sultry hot days of mid-June, people still talking college football up here. I'm talking college football. I'm talking college basketball and everything else. But it's great to be on with you, John. You know, no off days on the Wolverine.com, no off weeks, because there's just too much content to go over, right?
There's no question about it. And we're always talking Michigan football, and we are talking Michigan football most certainly on this day, because there are just some things that, as we draw to the close of one of our busier times of the year, even though the events aren't going on, but football talk is always going on. We're finishing up the football preview. I know that's near and dear to your heart, and it's something that all the folks on the Fort and beyond, our premium message board, are looking forward to. I love the time of year when people from coast to coast are saying, oh, it arrived in Santa Barbara, California, or in Miami, Florida, wherever it might be. So we've talked to a lot of people. We've talked to players on this Michigan team. We've talked to their relatives. We've talked to their friends. We've talked to some coaches. And we've talked to some very savvy observers about Michigan. And that's what I want to focus in on a couple of things. I'll start with a rather maybe controversial topic. And one that I know that we have discussed before, but I'm just going to lay something out to you and then toss it to you in the spirit of good jousting with regard to a subject that is going to be on the lips of most Michigan fans between now and through camp and into the season. So I'll just say it right this way. Cade McNamara, as a quarterback, his first full year as a quarterback, he gets Michigan into position to do some great things against Ohio State. The Wolverines beat Ohio State. They win the Big Ten. They make the college football playoff for the first time ever, not with a 2 or 3 year starter at quarterback, but with a first year starter. I think Cade McNamara, for all of J.J. McCarthy's tremendous potential, I think Cade McNamara is going to be your starter in the opener. I think he will be starting when Michigan plays at Iowa, and I think he will be starting when the Wolverines play down at Columbus. Convince me I'm wrong.
Well, you might be right. And, you know, and to be honest with you, and this might sound, you know, evasive, I mean, it's not so much who starts. And everybody says, oh, you don't want to do the Stanley Jackson, Joe Germain thing from Ohio State in 96, or the two quarterback system, Brady, Drew Henson, that didn't work, whatever. So what do you do? So and when you say start, does that mean that J.J. McCarthy and all of his skill set and what he does to threaten the defense is going to get basically a situational 6 to 8, maybe 10 snaps out of the, let's say, 70 snaps in the game on a good day. I mean, is that – you got to paint the whole picture for me, John, before – just besides just tagging it as your starter. I get all that. I could almost go along with that. I just want – I want more participation out of that young man, number nine.
Yeah, well, I don't think you get 6 to 8 snaps. I think you got more than that most of the time last year. I think that you expand the package for J.J. McCarthy.
Well, define that. Define that. Let's define – I don't mean to get caught up in just raw numbers, but, you know, when you're dealing with – and I know situations will call for different things, but let's say 70 offensive snaps. How do you break down percentage-wise who gets what to make it – Not just equitable and fair or anything. I mean to put yourself in the best position to beat good teams. Not the cupcakes coming out of the chute. That's easy. Okay, that's not even an issue. I'm talking about at Iowa. I'm talking about Penn State at home. I'm talking about Michigan State or at home. Yeah, Michigan State's at home. And going to Columbus. There's two tough road games. At Iowa City, at Ohio State. What puts you in the best position to win those games in terms of the quarterback participation?
All right, let's go there, because I think it's completely situational as to opponent and as to what's happening in the game. When you're playing against, for instance, you know, you've got this non-conference schedule that has been much decried by Tom Crawford, and I get why.
Justly so.
Because you want them to be playing a little bit tougher competition to be more ready down the road.
Exactly.
I'm looking at it as, okay, you've got those wins in the book. You have more time for more people to do more things early. And when I look at, okay, they're playing Hawaii, and they go into the second half, and they're up 28-3. I don't think it has to get to 40-3 before you let other guys take over. I think you know you're going to win that game. You maybe let J.J. McCarthy have the entire second half, even though he's appeared in the first half. You gear it that way. When you get to the tougher games like in Iowa, I just think you build on what you were doing last year. You saw J.J. McCarthy being able to come into the game, use his legs, do the run pass option more and more effectively than a Cade McNamara could. You use his arm as a threat, both as a decoy at times. I mean, the play action with J.J. McCarthy is probably a better sell at times than with Cade McNamara. So there's a lot of things that you can do. And I just want to see him certainly be very involved. But, no, I don't think it has to be 6 to 8 snaps or just a couple of series in the game. I think they did a pretty good job in his first year of play of getting him involved. I just think it needs to be expanded. And again, as you are playing some of these games where I think there's a form of conservatism when you think, oh, well, you know, maybe Hawaii's going to come back on us, or Colorado State, which didn't have a good year last year. You know, we'll see how those games go. But if you're in control halfway through, then I think you can be a little bit more generous in terms of who you put on the field.
Which would be a change from last year's, because when you look at the play charts and all that, because you described, let me give you an example, the Western Michigan game when J.J. got in the game. I mean, it was not the start of the third quarter. Or, I mean, you know, and I know it was his first game. And that touchdown pass to Baldwin was on a broken plate, let's be real. I mean, they're not putting him in a situation where he has to execute, where he can enhance and develop his skill set. In game-time situations, when the game is still on the line, we're not, you know, like you said, 40-3. Because what Harbaugh does, he subs late. let's be real. You go look, you go, and I'm talking about on the defensive side of the ball. When you look in some of these blowouts, he brings in guys late. He might filter some in, but they're coming late. Then they're all there, 6 minute mark on, down, you know, when you're up 5 touchdowns. But yeah, so that would be a definite upgrade. And I think before our next podcast, I'm gonna seriously go through the number of snaps that that JJ had. The Georgia game was, you know, when the team got blown out, and you might as well throw this guy in because you know the other guy's getting his ass, you know, buried in the sand. Let's just go with JJ. I mean, I just, you know, take that away. I really want to go, you know, for myself to see exactly how much participation JJ got.
Yeah, well, and I as I have attempted to explain, I have no problem with JJ seeing time because you are one snap away, one play away from him being your every snap quarterback. And I think beyond that, that's kind of the traditional saying. But he's more than a backup quarterback. There's no question about that. Well, we saw that last year. They're getting him involved. He's like 1A rather than B. The more you can have him completely ready. If he was to be the starter in Columbus, then make sure that he's on the field at Iowa enough so that not only he can help you, but that he is ready for that kind of a crowd and that kind of situation.
Well, so you're presenting JJ McCarthy to us in a premise of we need to prepare him in a backup role so he's ready. So it's a quote-unquote reserve mentality that you're describing JJ McCarthy. And I get in these discussions with our mutual friend, my media colleague, Rico Beer on Press Pass, All Stars on Fox 47 in Lansing. You know, he's a Michigan State fan media. We know that from 97.1 with Mike Bellini. But, you know, who does he want as a Michigan quarterback? Cade McNamara. All Michigan State people want Cade McNamara. Why? They feel less threatened by Cade McNamara is my interpretation. Not that that's the decision maker, but they always spew out the comeback. Oh, well, you know, he fumbles the ball. He costs you the game in East Lansing, you know, in East Lansing in the game and the Haskins handoff. He costs you the game. Doesn't talk about that laser touchdown pass in the north end zone that he threw to Andrew Anthony Jr. Doesn't talk about that pass. Some of the other good stuff he does, and all the stuff he did throughout the entire season. So I'm just all about, you know, if we're in this negotiation, John, of what do we do with this two quarterback system, the Brady Drew Henson situation, or whatever you want to call it? Are we going to come to the middle? I'm not asking, you know, necessarily that he starts. I just want more than the few snaps, and I want relevant participation where the game is on the line, where he creates the margin, the lead, if you will, JJ McCarthy. Maybe even start him a couple of games. I don't know if that's possible, but he's got 2 minutes skill set to sit on the bench more than just 8 or 10 plays.
Yeah, and I agree. I want an expanded package for him. I want him to be fully ready to take over as the quarterback on an every down basis if that is needed. I think there are different ways that quarterbacks win games, though. I mean, I get the fact that people see JJ McCarthy and see his athleticism and see his arm and think, wow, this guy is going to be just a superstar. And I tend to think that he will be down the road. But I also know that people thought the same thing about Joe Milton against Minnesota in an opening game in 2020 because he looked like a war beater. He can throw it forever, and he's got good athleticism. I'm not making the comparison to those two guys, but I think we can fall in love with arm strength and with athleticism and yet ignore or overlook the ways that some quarterbacks win games. And that's by knowing when to throw it in the second row, or knowing how to not throw it to the other team, to be able to instantly. We talk about edge rushers and the challenge that they present. There's two ways to at least two ways to beat edge rushers. One is to peel away from them and create something like a J.J. McCarthy can. The other way is to be savvy enough to be able to pick up the hot route and get rid of the ball and make people pay for bringing the heat, the extra heat that you might on a blitz, and those situations. So I just think that there's a lot more to Cade McNamara than he has been given credit for in some areas. I go right back to my talks with Doug Karsh, who's down on the field for every game, and seeing and hearing what he has to say about, you know, some of those plays, those bang bang plays, decision making wise, that Cade McNamara had to make.
You know, I'm not denying that at all. And I know the hot route thing, and I also know his trajectory sometimes has the ball going in the back of his offensive line's helmets. I mean, he gets the ball batted down. I'm getting ahead of myself here, because keep in mind that I'm not noting here that J.J. McCarthy is coming off a shoulder situation, if you will. He's got a situation he's got to work out with his shoulder, okay? It was a non-surgical procedure. So there's some diciness of that, and there's no diciness of that. I mean, it's going to be interesting to see how that plays up, because he's not 100% right now. And so I might be chasing after something that is not, a workable deal anyway, if this injury does linger, and then it becomes a non-discussion issue. But I want to see that young man, when he's healthy, have an opportunity to move this offense, because when I look at the big time programs in college football, I see quarterbacks that are there's some attributes that I yearn that the Michigan quarterback has, and J.J. McCarthy fits a lot of those attributes.
I understand, and I'll tell you what, I certainly appreciate J.J. McCarthy for many reasons. One, that through all this, he's gotten all this hype, and probably some people say, well, why don't you just jump in the portal and go somewhere else? No desire to do that at all. He's just said, look, I'm here. I love Michigan. I'm dug in. I'm going to be here. And I want to, and I certainly recognize his physical talents. I just think that Michigan is in a good situation. The way it was last year, if they can take that same situation and build on it for both of these guys. So, you know, and the other thing is, had he not had shoulder issues, and had he gone through spring ball, that being J.J. McCarthy, I might be in much more of a position.
Exactly.
To say, I don't know that, I'm not making any bold predictions about who starts at Iowa and that sort of thing. So, We'll watch this thing play out. As we're talking about Iowa and the games you mentioned, I like your mention, the fact that Michigan has really only two what I would consider very tough road games, Iowa and Ohio State, and that puts so much on that first one.
It does.
I honestly believe my prediction, I shouldn't mention this, but for the magazine, was the strong possibility of Michigan being able to go into Columbus undefeated. And if they do that, there is an outside possibility that they could come away from that game not winning and still make the college football playoff. Thoughts there?
This is where I got twisted up in this non-conference slate, because I think the going to Iowa City, there's so much pressure on that game, because you don't have a mulligan there hanging out there for you. If you have a goof up in the regular season against a good team on the road like the Iowa Hawkeyes, that would be an acceptable loss with credibility in terms. If you beat a decent actually play a Power Five team, and your three-game non-conference slate, all at home, mind you, that are pretty weak teams. I mean, Hawaii and UConn, let's face it, John, these are two of the weakest team in the group of five teams. I mean, that's just reality. And those are two of your three home games right before you go into Iowa. And I just don't think that puts you in position to really expose yourself to what you need to work on in a tough game in Iowa City. And I'm being redundant when I say that. But, yeah, you're right. So if they got to beat Iowa, if they lose to Iowa after, you know, they got to run the table. They got no money in the till to get entrance into the nightclub there.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And my thing, my look at that same situation is if they're playing a Notre Dame early and they lose that game narrowly, or you know, by 10 points or so, and then they win the rest until they get to Columbus, lose in a shootout, two losses, you're not going to make it. One loss in a close shootout game at Columbus, you might slip into that four spot in the college football playoff.
Yeah, so you're under the premise you're just saying you're trying to build this thing that the Michigan can get into the CFP with losing to Ohio State. That's how you're structuring your premise.
I just think the way everything's set up, you can't afford an early loss these days in college football unless you have that early loss and then you run the table.
Beat Notre Dame, like for example, 2018, Michigan opened with a loss to Notre Dame, right? And then they ran the table all the way to Columbus. All they had to do was beat Ohio State, and they were favored, and they got blown out. Okay, we know how that nightmare went. Okay, it was all set up because their loss. All the experts were talking about. Yeah, but that's a credible loss to Notre Dame because Notre Dame was good.
Yep. But you take that same year and you play somebody that is not Notre Dame on the road, and you win that game. Then you get to the end and you don't get blown out by Ohio State, but you lose 42-40 or 42-41. It's a different deal. So I think they're in a position to be able to win every game they play up until Columbus. And I'm not saying they can't win down there, but you'd sure rather be going into that one with no losses than with one.
And these home games are not cupcakes either. Let's just don't check off Penn State and Michigan State home games in October as W's, because that's the furthest thing from the truth.
Yeah, that's true. And they've certainly proven the ability to not get the job done against Michigan State, home and away. They've proven under Harbaugh that they can win at Michigan State, but they've also proven that being home is no guarantee whatsoever. So all of this is great summer talk. We're going to move on and talk a little bit. I know you wanted to mention one Mr. Jordan Poole, switching away from football for just a minute, and then we'll go back there. But your thoughts about how he continues to play extremely well in the NBA playoffs.
Yeah, it's been really interesting to watch Jordan navigate the playoff in the finals, because you're playing against the Boston Celtics, one of the great defensive teams. And last night, I mean, and he's had a little bit of an up and down with his game. Sometimes he hasn't gotten his shots, but 14 minutes of play last night and three critical threes, including one at the end of the quarter, one of the quarters, maybe the third quarter again. I'm not sure which quarter it was, or half, whatever. That 14 minutes and 14 points. I mean, and he, you know, this guy is amazing. And he was interviewed on NBA TV after the game, and well-spoken. I mean, maturity. I mean, his 23rd birthday, John, is Sunday, which ironically they could win game seven on his birthday. 23 years old, Jordan Poole is, and what he's in the finals. And I mean, Isaiah Thomas was humming to victors, you know, kind of doing the Michigan paying homage to him. And and he was smiling. I'm just happy. You know me in the NBA, and you know me in the NFL, John. Yeah. It's all about Michigan players. I love to see him do good, and he's there with the Splash Brothers, and he's one win away from an NBA ring, and I'm so happy for that young man.
Yep, that's good stuff, no doubt. And it's about continuing to bring in the Jordan Pools and the Aiden Hutchinsons and the players that are difference makers. You, switching back just on our final topic to football, I know you have some concerns about procuring players in the future at a level that will allow you to compete against the best of the best. Is that an accurate evaluation of your stance here?
Yeah, the last thing I want to be accused of is being a recruitnik. Okay, let me go and make that declaration right now, John. Right. But I'm aware of some things, some trends that are going on right now, and it's just not the fact Michigan's only got, you know, 2023 recruits so far. That's not so unusual. You have Northwestern in the top 10. Why? Because they got all these commitments. You know, Northwestern's in the top 10. Notre Dame's number one. But I am concerned about a couple of programs that are really getting good players that are going to – Ohio State always gets good players. And Ryan Day, he is not going to go away as a juggernaut. They're going to get great players. I really – much as I – you know, he's an Ohio State guy. I'm more and more impressed by him whenever I hear him talk, and I'll just leave that at that, and what he does, how he does his job, and I'll just leave it at that. But there's another guy up here, Mel Tucker, that I'm concerned about. He is kicking ass recruiting, and he loves to recruit. He is taking recruiting at Michigan State and the bland three-star character kids, chip on the shoulder kids, into some studs up here. And so, you know, they're top 10, top 15 for Michigan State. That's quite a bit. He's doing it in creative ways. He's bringing out Lamborghinis and putting them on Spartan Stadium Field and having a guy sit in cars for picture opportunities. Not that you're going to get this as an NIL gift, but it's just doing fun stuff. He seems like a fun guy, and Michigan State is getting athletes on defense that concerns me. And I'm fearing that Michigan State's talent level will go up, and we know what dealing with Michigan State is from a Michigan perspective. When their talent is average, how difficult will it be when they're really got talent? And that concerns me when you got Ohio State, and also you got Marcus Freeman down there at Notre Dame. And I'm not just talking about the CJ Carr thing, but watch out for Notre Dame, because you're in their same recruiting footprint with Notre Dame.
Yeah, I mean, you have to yourself continue to procure the kind of talent that is going to put you in position to beat all of those teams. And I think Michigan will continue to do that. I love. I think that their offensive line recruiting, the fact that they were able to pick up Oluwatimi in the offseason is going to prove monumental for that offensive line. You have long longed for an upgraded old style Michigan rushing attack. They mm-hmm. got back to that a little bit last year. I think they're going to have more of it this year. So yeah, it doesn't stop. I get your concern in these other areas. Certainly. Michigan State is an interesting one to me because they absolutely did not compete against Ohio State, just flat out.
No, didn't. Hey, listen, you know, I hear you totally. I'm just talking about Michigan versus Michigan State. Okay, mm-hmm. They've beaten them two times. I mean, Tucker's he's 2-0 against Harbaugh. Okay, and the other thing is this D line coach, Marco Coleman, I think they got a good one. And Mike Elson, I got supreme respect for what he did at Notre Dame. I hope that is a good. I hope that works out great at Michigan as a D line coach, not just from schematic, but getting guys that want to play for him. I'm hoping that works out because there's some pretty steep competition. Larry Johnson down there at Ohio State, and I think Marco Coleman is going to be a really good one at Michigan State. I mean, these position coaches that have the slash, coordinator kind of deal to them. There's some good talented coaches, and Michigan's in a lot of competition. That Big Ten East is brutal, brutal. And yeah. It was so much fun to go down, to Miami, and even though they lost, that they were in the CFP. I'm spoiled now. I want it to happen again, and I'm getting greedy. I want it to happen next year, and so that's why I'm paranoid about some of these other thorns in our side.
Well, there you go. And I think a key to getting there is a dominant offensive line. And you were mentioning guys that recruit and also are a coordinator. Sherrone Moore, big key there. I'll tell you what, yeah. What a job in year one. So, hey, great discussion today. I appreciate it. We will continue this throughout the summer and into the fall. Tom Crawford, great to have you with us, and let's do this again soon.
Always a pleasure, JB. Until next time on the Wolverine Podcast.